Act 3. The Genie Makes a Dank Deal. Elwyn led Spark and the genie into the chamber of a tower several stories tall, open all the way to the distant ceiling. Staircases and scaffolding climbed the walls around, many only wide enough to permit a creature the size of Elwyn access to the higher shelves. The shelves themselves bore thousands of books. Some were made of metal plates bound with rings. Some might have been made from petals, and others, disturbingly, might have been made from bones. They ranged from tiny tomes the size of fingerprints to one so large that Spark mistook it for a wardrobe. There were more than just books, too. All kinds of artifacts cluttered the room. Paintings, sculptures, clay pots, wood blocks, scrolls, folded sheaves of cloth, tapestries. Something that looked eerily like a sarcophagus leaned against a corner. From the ceiling hung a monstrous chrysalis-like jewel, the same color as the oculus Elwyn wore around her neck. Watery lights danced across its surface.
"This is the Metapolis Library,"
said Elwyn. She hopped up onto a desk and turned to face Spark and the genie.
"As you likely have begun to suspect, there are a great many worlds beyond what either of you have ever known. Normally these worlds, canons as we call them, only overlap through tales, when a historical account in one canon matches a fantasy story in another. Such is the case of the Asharian Epic. In Asharia, it is a chronicle of true events regarding the six noble tasks of Ali Sahin."
The genie clenched his fist so tightly that his nails pricked blood in his own palm. Elwyn continued, still focusing on Spark.
"In your world, however, it reads as nothing more than a construct of some author's imagination. In this way, the realities of these two canons touch, but don't conflict with each other. Or at least, they didn't."
"Until last night,"
Spark finished.
"Then the epic, as you call it, at the library, sprung an epic leak, right? Oh, this is just like that episode of Valor Patrol when the Galadorian dimension overlapped with downtown Merkham and Arrowman had to fight the aliens and stuff. That's awesome!"
"Awesome, perhaps, but also dangerous, as you have experienced."
Elwyn folded her dainty paws before her, fixing Spark with a grim look.
"Vesper told me that at least a few humans lost their lives when Ali Sahin's guardian bled into your world through the Asharian Epic."
Spark's heart sank.
"Oh, right."
"It gets worse than djinn or guardians. The dark energy of these breaches, the distortion, is highly caustic. It unravels the essence of the canon's reality. Left too long, it festers into glyres, which carry the distortion even further."
"Those plague rat things Vesper and I fought."
"Indeed. As those vermin spread the distortion, the canon becomes even more unstable. In little time, the world will die."
That information sank in for a moment while Elwyn guided Spark and the genie to a large window. Elwyn nipped at a braided cord and tugged, parting the curtains. Brilliant light rushed in. The genie's oval pupils turned to slits and he stepped back with a grimace. Spark, on the other hand, gasped and smushed her face against the glass. Beyond the window lay a city of tightly clustered buildings of all different kinds. Gothic arches butted right up against brilliant red pagodas. Minarets towered alongside fluted columns and glossy skyscrapers. Domes and gables and flat roofs and architecture that defied description and gravity stretched way out into the distance, giving way to a violet sea and a tunneled sky dotted with floating islands. Vehicles ranging from wagons drawn by two-headed oxen to sleek little pods that resembled spaceships threaded between the buildings.
"What is this place?"
Spark breathed, fogging the pain in her wonder.
"We call it Metapolis. It is a crossroad between canons."
"So all these people are from other worlds,"
Spark said, trying to make out the tiny little dots that moved about in the city below. She moved her face on the glass for a new vantage and continued to gape.
"Refugees from the distortion, yes."
Elwyn rubbed away the streaks Spark left on the glass with her paw before turning solemn eyes on the superhero.
"Many have no home to return to."
Spark set her jaw and struck a dashing pose.
"Well, I'm here to help. Just point me at this distortion thing and I'll give him what for!
She said fiercely. Ellen chuckled softly.
That's what I hoped to hear. Unfortunately, the only lead we have is that vexing distortionist.
She growled.
You mean violin girl? Goofy hat?
Spark pantomimed the shape of Serenity's headpiece.
The very one. She's surely causing the distortion, but we don't know how. Or why.
Have you tried asking her?
Spark suggested. Ellen clicked her beak and looked at Spark skeptically.
Listen, if I've learned anything about bad guys from my comics, then it's this. If you get a villain comfortable, they'll spill their whole life story, including their master plan. I mean, let's face it, who doesn't like talking?
Ellen and the genie stared at her. Silence.
Well, maybe you two are the wrong people to ask.
Spark tutted.
But seriously, this could work. Just point me in the prima donna's direction, and I'll have her talking in no time.
It will not be so simple,
Ellen said.
Perhaps a wish is in order.
The genie purred. Spark started. She'd grown so accustomed to Ellen's telepathy lapping against her mind that the sound of an audible voice was jarring, even one as soft and coaxing as the genie's.
I've felled armies before.
The genie continued, flicking his wrist in a dismissive brush.
Word your wish just right, and I'll have this distortioness and her little minions obliterated by sundown.
The feathers along Elwyn's spine rippled subtly.
A possibility I've contemplated,
Ellen said, as if loath to admit it.
But your power can only affect one cannon at a time, and Serenity can somehow move between worlds without an oculus. If we wished for her defeat or capture, she could evade the wish simply by moving to another plane, or even counter it somehow, just as she evidently thwarted Sahin's wish for an inescapable pit by forcing you and the Guardian into the Earth Cannon. What we really need is more information.
She fixed the genie with a shrewd look.
I know this of your contract, Thrall. Knowledge is one luxury you can't grant.
The genie's expression darkened, but he said nothing.
In the meantime, all we can do is try to close the breaches by sending interlopers back to where they belong. That is the task of the lore treaders, and one to which you too may be particularly qualified, even barring wishes.
Ellen slid down from her perch on the windowsill. Spark's heart fluttered in anticipation as she followed Ellen over to a narrow bookshelf. Ellen rummaged in a drawer and emerged, clutching a smooth, translucent orange stone in her beak. She placed it gingerly in Spark's palm.
This is an oculus. They allow us to travel between cannons, return strangers to their own worlds, and purge the distortion. This one is named Flicker. For the time being, it's yours.
Spark turned the oculus over in her fingers, admiring its fiery sheen. Even the genie dropped his cool indifference long enough to look it over.
Everyone seems pretty upset about me having this,
Spark said, closing her hand over the oculus and looking up at Ellen.
Yes. The oculi are very peculiar. They choose their own bearers, Spark, and Flicker did not choose you.
Her voice became softer and she tilted her head.
But I did. As long as you hold that stone, you are a lore treader. Do you understand?
Spark met Ellen's gaze squarely, feeling for the first time that something large and terrible was at stake. Ellen was making a dire gamble on a firecracker teen that didn't even have her driver's permit yet, and a supernatural convict so infamous that there was a multidimensional book about him. And yet, she believed. At the ire of the rest of the lore treaders, Ellen saw in them something worthy of making them agents in some sort of world-hopping special ops force. Spark took a determined breath, letting it out slowly.
We won't let you down, Ellen!
She promised.
Ellen
said. Her attention shifted to the genie, who smiled a little and bowed in the half-light.
I'll send you home for now. Since you are traveling with the use of an oculus, the distortion should stop spawning around you two. I will call upon you when we have need of your help.
She passed by Spark, and Spark felt Elwyn's voice again, but this time it was different. Much quieter.
Be careful, young one.
Elwyn whispered grimly.
Just because the thrall isn't distorted anymore doesn't mean he's not still very, very dangerous. I pray we're not making a mistake.
She seemed to exhale. Spark could feel the weight of her words on her mind.
Be wary of him, Spark.
Hours later, Elwyn's warning still echoed in Chrissy's consciousness as she sat in the window seat of her bedroom, looking out into the night sky.
Even if he can't just grant the distortions away, he must be really powerful,
Chrissy thought. She looked across her room toward the genie. He sat cross-legged on the floor, impossibly rigid. His arms were partially raised, hands angled toward his forehead, where a feverish light gleamed under the fringe of his hair. A similar glow leaked from beneath his closed eyelids, and Chrissy could see his lips moving. Every now and then, she could just hear the whisper of his voice. He was reviewing his contract, he'd said. Once a day, he sank into this trance and mentally recited every single rule he had to follow as a thrall. Chrissy had thought trying to memorize the names of every U.S. president was bad. At least she didn't have to do it every single day for hundreds of years. And how long did this trance take, anyway? It felt like he'd been muttering to himself for ages. She squirmed. His eyes snapped open, and the light extinguished. He fixed Chrissy with a weary scowl as his body relaxed.
Oh, all done with your trance thing?
Chrissy chirped.
No, your mind is too anxious. I'll have to start over later,
muttered the genie.
Wait, what?
Chrissy stared at him as he climbed to his feet and loped over to join her in the window seat. He held out his hand for the oculus that Chrissy was toying with. She complied, dropping Flicker into his palm.
I can only meditate while my master, mistress, is calm or distant. You're too excited.
As he spoke, he held Flicker up and squinted at it, measuring its size. He shook his empty hand in a sifting motion, and it suddenly filled with an assortment of bejeweled rings. He rolled them around until he found one set with a gem similar in size to the oculus. The other rings vanished in a plume of smoke, and the genie drew a knife and began to pry the stone loose. Chrissy sighed happily while he worked.
Can you blame me? This has been the craziest day of my life!
She flopped back into the cushion and let her head loll against the window, smiling out at the night. Just then, a streak of light shot across the sky. Chrissy gasped and almost kicked the genie in her excited floundering.
Oh man, it just got crazier! Did you see that? A shooting star! I gotta make a wish!
She scrunched up her face, crossed her fingers on both hands, and started whispering a little rhyme under her breath.
Spark, don't you dare,
the genie said, pointing the knife at her in warning. Chrissy opened her eyes to find him brandishing the blade at her. He quickly hid his threatening expression behind a charming chuckle and flipped the blade over in his hand so that the handle was toward her instead.
Bet, I've told you, it's very dangerous to make a wish without consulting me first,
he said in his most debonair voice. Chrissy was startled, but quickly taken in by his manner.
No, not a wish for you, for the star,
she giggled, jerking her head toward the window. Then she pinched her lips together, eyes round.
Although now that you mention it, I probably shouldn't wish on stars anymore. Could be pretty bad if I said something silly and you had to grant it.
Pretty bad doesn't begin to cover the risk.
The genie scoffed, laughing.
There's no telling what kind of terrible things could happen. You and I could cause quite a bit of trouble, you know.
Chrissy met his warm gaze and found herself smiling. Something about his voice made trouble sound fun. But as that thought crossed her mind, she sat bolt upright.
That's just the kind of thing the Lord Treaders are expecting me to do,
she said, horrified.
They're just waiting for me to mess up and do something stupid or selfish.
Resolve boiled up in Chrissy's core.
Well, I won't give them the satisfaction,
she decided in a zeal that bordered on ferocity.
Elwyn won't be sorry. I may not be an official chosen one, Lord Treader, but I will prove I'm a hero.
I'm sure you will,
said the genie, and he handed the ring he'd been working with to her, now set with the oculus.
Wow, thanks,
Chrissy cooed. She took it, and a lopsided smile tugged at her mouth.
Dang, this is a chunky ring.
If you don't like it, you could wish for something different,
he suggested with a smirk while Chrissy tried to fit it on each of her fingers. Chrissy tittered.
No, this is fine,
she said, grunting a little as she forced it over the knuckle of her middle finger. She tilted her hand slowly from side to side to admire the oculus.
It kind of reminds me of Sunbeam's solar signet. Bzzz.
She pretended to shoot a laser from the ring, then she tightened her fist and grinned.
Man, just think of the mark this would leave if I punched someone with it!
The genie let out a breath of laughter.
You are the strangest person I've ever met.
I'll take that as a compliment,
Chrissy announced cheerily. She grew quiet for a moment, then looked up at the genie.
What do you think I should wish for?
Chrissy asked him. Before he could reply, she batted a hand, saying,
And don't tell me you'd wish to be free, because I already know that. I'll use my third wish to set you free, like in Aladdin.
A strange expression crossed the genie's face.
I can't grant myself out of my own contract,
he said.
Oh.
Chrissy wilted, rubbing her shoulder.
So you're stuck as a slave forever?
Immortality comes with a heavy price.
At long last, the excited teen calmed down enough to drop off to sleep. The genie had resumed his trance, starting at the beginning again. A voice he'd learned to hate whispered in his mind, its dark, cursed words dripping like venom against his consciousness. Hundreds of years, and yet he'd never quite gotten used to the sensation. Chrissy's nightlight went out. The genie's eyelids flickered to wakefulness, though it took him a moment to understand why. His mistress still slept. What had interrupted him? He abruptly became aware of a very large presence looming behind him. He drew a sharp breath, and with a rush of smoke, he was on his feet and staring down the newcomer with guarded intensity. A big man grinned at him through the long cigarette holder that he clenched in his teeth. He only had one eye.
I saw you watching me earlier in Metapolis,
the genie noted, recognizing the stranger's sharp raiment. The fanned half-cape, the smartly tailored coat, the jaunty top hat.
The same,
the man proclaimed. The genie's eyes jolted toward Chrissy. Despite the man's booming voice, the girl didn't stir. The genie's gaze returned to the odd man's face just in time to see him smiling in torment.
Must be tiresome, having to review your contract every night.
The genie felt his blood curdle.
What do you want?
He hissed.
You.
The stranger responded with a little quirk of his eyebrows.
Your power.
The genie scoffed and leaned back against Chrissy's desk with his arms folded.
Huh. Get in line.
Ha ha! I never was one to wait my turn.
The man burst loudly, throwing his cape back with one hand as he bent into a flourished bow. At eye level, he doffed his hat.
Mr. Sabo,
he quipped an introduction. His voice dropped to a pleased growl, and he slid the top of his cane under the genie's chin, tilting his head back as if inspecting a prize animal.
But I hope you'll soon call me master.
He leered through his large teeth. The genie scowled and slapped Mr. Sabo's cane away with the back of his hand.
If you know of my contract, then I trust you know what you must do.
Of course,
Mr. Sabo crooned, tapping ash from his cigarette holder.
Your previous master must be disposed of.
The genie's eyes shone as he stood, a dare.
Do it then.
You will not intervene?
Mr. Sabo asked, regarding the genie with a reading smirk.
What does she mean to me?
Ha! You are as heartless as they say,
crowed Mr. Sabo, cuffing the genie on the shoulder like an old friend.
Alas, there is no sport in killing a child in their bed.
If you want sport, wake her,
the genie suggested contemptuously.
Let her transform. That should provide plenty of sport. She'll yell bizarre puns at you even as she draws her last breath.
Mr. Sabo chuckled.
Tempting. Unfortunately, like you, I also bear a curse.
He sat against the desk beside the genie, uncomfortably close.
I cannot kill.
Pity.
But I may be able to arrange some sort of accident,
said Mr. Sabo, fixing the genie with his one eye. The iris was squared and bright red, like a dye. The genie's brow furrowed.
Why are you telling me this?
He asked slowly. Mr. Sabo flexed his hand on the head of his cane, carved in the shape of a horse's bust.
I need to know whether I can count on you to help.
The genie's lip curled in disdain.
I cannot harm my mistress. My contract restrains me. If you want her dead, you're on your own.
But you can protect her from harm,
hummed Mr. Sabo. He took a long drag on his cigarette and released the smoke. It gave off no scent.
Suppose there were an incident. Would the dutiful servant rush to her aid?
The genie stepped past Mr. Sabo, glowering at him over his shoulder.
What is there to gain either way, whether I am her servant or yours? Nothing changes for me.
Oh, not so,
Mr. Sabo said, leaping to his feet.
If you remain loyal to your mistress, you will hang at her beck and call until she inevitably dies, and you pass to your next owner,
he said, as if reciting a terribly annoying piece of trivia.
But,
he continued, and his big toothy grin reappeared,
if you become mine.
He leaned over the genie's shoulder, lightly grasping the padlock that hung from the thrall's collar with one hand. The genie shot an affronted look at this invasion of his personal space, until Mr. Sabo raised his other hand. In his palm lay a silvery key. It matched the lock. The genie's breath caught.
I can set you free,
Mr. Sabo whispered in his ear, still wearing that Cheshire smile. The genie stared hungrily at the key.
I'm listening.